Welcome to Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. I'm Paula Slater, your host. Today we have a very special guest who is a filmmaker, and she's just created the film The Equestrian, a beautiful film that everyone should see. Today I'd like to welcome Sybil Meir to Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. Welcome, Sybil.
Hello.
Now, I was wondering if you could tell me, you're a filmmaker, and where did you start?
Did
you go to film school?
No, I didn't. I actually had, I specialized in language and literature at university, and in French and German, and then went on to interpreting and translating. And I'd had my own business working, specializing in the social sciences, and so predominantly working with academics who had either journals or books, in social economics and economics, economic history, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Strategic management, that sort of thing. And that's what I'd done for a while, and it was very good, and it too was quite interesting, and had its own intellectual challenges. But I had then taken a break, and then decided, actually after a very nice long boozy lunch with an actor who said, "Oh, you should direct." So it just got me thinking along different lines, and so I then went on and wrote my first short film.
Mm-hmm. The name of that was entitled
Honey and Sting.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about a beekeeper with a hive of magical honeybees.
Ooh.
That he sent out into the world to teach humans about the pain and pleasure of desire.
Oh, excellent. And now, this was a short film?
Yes, that was a short film.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the second short. Actually, in that short, I don't know if you were acquainted with the 70s show. What was that? Starsky and Hutch.
Yes.
Huggy Bear played Antonio Fargas played the beekeeper in that film. So it was a little bit of a departure for him. And it was very nice. That was very interesting. And then the second film is called The Chef's Letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a chef who falls in love with one of his co-workers and decides to tell this person that he's in love with them on the day that they're leaving. So,
mm-hmm. What you've been writing, I'm going to assume, and they say never assume, but I gather that you've been writing prior to this, your own, like, maybe short stories, or what's the history on that?
These are just the screenplays that I've written, so
mm-hmm.
the short screenplays. So, anything that I've written would have been academic. So,
and really, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No, I'm just looking for the spark of the beginnings of creativity, and they started right away with this.
How do you mean? For instance, with the story and
background.
Is that what you mean?
Oh no, I'm just looking at background. Usually, people that are as creative as you are have a background like your childhood writing or doing something that way, because it takes a certain gift that to be able to. Even though you've got a background in literature and so on, it takes a gift to create what you've done.
Okay.
And I'm saying, as a child, what were you doing? Were you writing then? Were you imagining? Because
not really, probably a lot of imagining.
Yes,
A lot of imagining.
Mm.
And I mean, even as a child, I know that before I could write, I would dictate stories to my father, who wrote them down.
Oh, that's excellent.
So, Yes, I mean, but that would have been it. So, I mean, but I wasn't a huge writer. I mean, I didn't write a lot. I never, well, I'm not a diary keeper. That's a different thing. And, but that never interested me. But I didn't really write down my stories, but I suppose I kept them in my head.
Now, when it comes to screenplays, again, you're going to be imagining or visualizing what it is that you want to see out there or up there. And so how did you prepare for that?
For instance, with the equestrian, do you mean, or just in?
Let's take the equestrian since we're focusing on it, sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, just if we take that as an example, I'd actually been envisaging, well, I was obviously wanting to make another film, a short film, and I was considering adapting a short story on jump racing. And, you know, while I was thinking about, okay, you know, how do I go about finding, tracking down the author, and this sort of thing. And then I, as I was waiting for a lesson, my then trainer, he was practicing for, preparing for a competition. He's a dressage rider. And I just thought, it just struck me. I mean, I can't say what it was or what it is, but I thought, no, this is what I want to do. I mean, I think it needs to be about this type of equestrian discipline, or involving that type of equestrian discipline. And I didn't know what to do. At first, I thought about doing, well, it might be something a little bit experimental, but I'm not really, I mean, that is another type of filmmaking, and I mean, you know, and will have its own, it has its own framework and structure. And so you can't just simply do any old thing and say, right, well, that's an experimental film. But so I thought, well, better stick to what I'm practicing. So it would be a narrative drama. As I was sitting in the car one day, waiting for another lesson, I had this sort of vision, and there were two friends. And I think it's not that I could see, well, yes, let's say two friends, and they were arguing vehemently with one another, and it was because one had accused the other unjustly of having, you know, done something wrong. I just knew that it was a physical argument, and that it could only be resolved physically, and that would determine which way the relationship would go. And I knew that it was a man and a horse. Nobody else, no intermediaries, not just the two of them, directly to one another as equals. And that, for instance, is sort of the embryonic stage of the equestrian.
And so this is also about a relationship between a father and a son? Were you exploring that as well?
Yes, sort of tangentially to, because the central relationship is between the man and horse. But it is a sense of that we all come with baggage to relationships. And actually, it's not necessarily what has happened within that relationship that causes us to, or cause or influences our actions or words, but instead they're actually fed, or we can trace them back actually to other relationships, other causes, for instance, the equestrian is the father-son relationship, and what that is. And so not on how the son views that, and you know, I think certainly for me, there is a feeling that in trying to resolve the core relationship, the most important relationship to this young man, it's rooted in coming to terms with his relationship with his father.
And also the transference may be over to the horse, or were you thinking that?
Well, yes. We could, remove the horse and make it his girlfriend or his boyfriend or lover. You know, do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Or a fellow competitor. I mean, and it is because there is precisely this sort of intergenerational competition, and that is not necessarily there or hasn't originated from the son so much as from the father. And because it is, again, it's not obliquely, but one, how one shows that relationship, that and the short bit of history that these two have lived through, that you have this son who wants to be loved by his father and wants to please the father, wants to be accepted by the father, and who's not going to show up for on the most important day of his career. Yes, that's what I would say. And so that core of their relationship is the equestrianism. So that if that goes wrong, it's going to be very hard or very difficult to see how these two are going to relate.
And so the horse helps facilitate this?
Well, you see, I wouldn't say. I mean, yes, okay, one can say basically, yes, that's what happens. But I think, again, it's looking at it in another relationship, make the horse a man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so here you have a friend and you've now, a turn against them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only one there with you.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
I do.
They're the one who supports you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a common human weakness. Yes. Sorry, it's a failure in our psychological and emotional makeup that we turn against those who precisely want to support us.
Mm-hmm.
In times of stress. I mean, this can be, sorry, I don't want to, it's not everyone is like that, but there's a tendency to do that, that we turn against the one we think is weaker. And why do we think they're weaker? Well, they're weaker because they don't treat us abominably. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And so it actually takes a lot. And if you have a good friend, they allow you to sort of, they'll allow you to spin out of control up to a point and then say no more. Do you see? And,
yeah.
And then we have, it's sort of, I suppose, I mean, in a small way, because I'm not going to say I'm not Shakespeare, but it is, sort of between Hamlet and Gertrude, when he says that, let me hold up a mirror to show you the innermost part of you. And that is, I think, what is happening between him and the horse.
Mm-hmm.
He comes at him, to blame him. And then, you can imagine, I don't know, I'm not saying anything about you personally, Paula, of course I can't. But I know, I can see it in myself that there are times when so overcome by, it's frustration or feelings of inadequacy or, you launch towards the person who is actually going to try to help you or
right.
who might help you.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I think I can understand their part in that they think, okay, don't say anything, let's just go to bed. And there you are, pounding on the table saying, no, at 2 o'clock in the morning, no, this is the time we need to sort this thing out. And the other person who's still rational, is saying, no, really, I think we should sleep on it. And then it'll be, you'll see things differently. I mean, that sounds like it's a cliche. And yet, well, sometimes some cliches, they do stem out of truth,
mm-hmm.
if you see what I mean. And
yep.
And so this is, and it is an interesting thing because I mean, as you will have noticed, that at the end of the trailer, where it is that, you know, he must be broken and civilized, and that, you know, people get worried because they think immediately that, you know, one's talking about the horse. And I think, well, actually, here we've turned that on its head. And I mean, I'm not making this up. I actually think it's quite, I feel quite deeply and would hold to this, that it is here we have, it's the man. Man is the beast, the mm-hmm. animal, the brute. And it is the horse that is the civilizing
factor.
Character.
Right.
You know, in the relationship. And it is the horse that actually forces this boy to become a man.
Right.
And to become a man, for me, for him, for Freddie, is to face up to, you know, what his relationship with his father is, you know. Mm-hmm. You have somebody who will probably never love you. I mean, because we can look at it and say, you know, well, if Freddie had won, would that have been enough? If he had come first, would it have been enough? And I think for someone who has such feelings of inadequacy and is longing and, you know, pleading for someone else to love them, it won't be enough. Not until that person acknowledges them. I mean, you saw the father, so mm-hmm. what do you think?
Right. No, and I think that the interesting thing, again, is that that's exactly what horses are doing right now at this time in our world, is being a facilitator and helping people work through some of their issues and mirroring, exactly as you said, the human's problems or connecting in that way. And I think that it's a different perspective to show it through the way you've done it so beautifully in this film with everything. The visuals are just excellent, and the lighting and everything is, it just speaks to people. But again, it's just a different, it's another story, and I think it's great at this time.
Well, that's thank you. That's nice to hear from you. I do think, I mean, because I think it's, and it's not only, I mean, for other people who may not interact with horses, but I mean, with dogs,
yes,
with other animals, with other beings. And I think this is what happens. One is forced to have to move. And I don't want to say comfort zone, but I want to say, to move from, in a way, it is comfort zone, but your spot, your area of safety, of control, and that is control. And I think, especially for humans, that will be language.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in order to interact, in order to communicate, you're forced to find another way. The beauty, I think, of being, whether it's with horses or dogs, or, do you know, when you are down and if you are thinking, you know, that this person did this or that person said that, do you know what? That it means absolutely nothing to the horse or the dog.
Right.
They're actually, quite frankly, not interested. I mean, and actually, it's a good thing.
Yes.
Do you see? They're not going to turn around like the human. And God, okay, I'm not going to make any sexist jokes or anything. So, no, but they won't turn around like humans
mm-hmm.
and then say, okay, well, I know you showed up to ride, but here, let's spend the next 20 or 25 minutes just talking about what he said and then she said and then what you thought you were going to. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And that's just wallowing in the depths of these sort of, you know, I don't know.
Issue. Yeah.
Yes, yes, in which have do nothing but weigh you down and sort of they're stymieing, they block you. There's no way to move because it's just this weight that actually leads nowhere, and that is I think it's actually a very potent it's a very potent element or to come across. I mean to face. When interacting with, because now you are forced to move, to do something. Okay, if we are going to interact, if we are going to communicate with, okay, with, in this instance, the horse, then you need to do something. You need to be active now. You can no longer be passive and sponge-like and just soak up the negativity and, you know, pejorative things that people have said and you know, just waste away and, you know, in this quagmire of gossip or, you know, mm-hmm. or sulking and brooding. I mean, that's the choice.
That's nothing.
Yes. Yeah. Sort of like having a friend who says, you know, well, if you're not going to play, you know, go home.
Right.
You know, you don't want to do anything. You don't want to swim. You don't want to do that. You don't want to watch films. You don't want to go, you know, go out on the boat. You don't want to fish. You don't. Well, go home. Mm-hmm. Be bored by yourself. But, you know, and it does stop you and to make you think about yourself and what you're doing. And for me, it does teach one a lot about human frailty and also the strength. I mean, where one can gain strength and a sense of elegance and power. I mean, and that's in being free and living more in the moment as opposed to what if and what about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that of all the animals, I think that horses seem to lead the way. They seem to be the ones that are the more intuitive creatures than, say, mm-hmm. opposed to a dog, that help some people. And mm-hmm. often people that don't ride find their way.
Mm.
So when you were making this film, you chose Carl Hester for the dressage coach, and he's playing himself in this.
Yes. No, that was a funny story. I mean, it was good of him to accept the cameo, and that had actually taken place just on the back of the Europeans in Rotterdam in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd just flown back and came in a few hours later to get into makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. and then you have Lake Anderson playing the lead.
Yes.
And you used a warm blood for the lead horse. Now you probably had more than one horse, correct?
Yes, that is the hero stallion is a Swedish warm blood. His name is Sandros's dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was him, and there were two other horses. Oh, let me see if I remember the names. They were also stallions. They're stunt horses, and mm-hmm. so they. Been in a number of films, one more so than the other, so had seniority. So, one named Odemiro, I think was that, and Inca, and so they were one was an Arab Andalusian cross, and the other was a Lusitano. The Lusitano was very even tempered and. Quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And Inca, the Arab Andalusian, was much more fiery and sparky. He, you know, had this shrill cry as soon as he entered the arena.
Oh, my.
But it was just sort of
dramatic.
I'm here. So, you know, and we were doing, especially because the part of it, as you see from the film, that it occurs at night. And so mm-hmm. we had part night shoots, and so you can imagine, you know, at 10 o'clock at night,
right,
you're not really ready for the announcement that, but anyway, he did, and you know, he had little quirky movements, staccato movements with the feet, and sort of nervous twitching of the lips, I mean, just on their own, I mean, mm-hmm. not that anyone had done anything to him, but it was quite interesting, because then I thought, oh, all these little traits, these are characteristics which, of course, if one were dealing with a human actor, these are also things that these little traits and peculiarities or idiosyncrasies, we can call them, that one can use and right. adapt in the film. And mm-hmm. so that was quite useful. So.
Yes. And I think also the way that this is portrayed, again, shows great skill and getting the message across. For, you know, again, for the number of films that you've done before, I'm amazed. Like, it's such a beautiful film. And as I said before our interview, that I wished it was longer. And I'd love to see, a full-length feature film. That'd be great.
Okay.
So I'm asking, do something.
Okay.
And with horses, you certainly can pick the animals, that's for sure. And the actors, too. Lake has been riding before. He has experience, so that helped a lot, didn't it?
Yes. No, that was, I mean, it just made it slightly, it just made it easier.
Yeah.
Just easier. And but also, I mean, but one can't underestimate how to, there's just this ability, I mean, the actor, having an actor who's able to, I mean, that one takes seriously this relationship. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
That it's not.
It's, yes.
And you don't have the idea that this actor is going wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm not really having a relationship. I mean, not really feeling these things about this animal or something. So so that was quite important, but I think it worked out well. So
mm-hmm. I think, yes, even if you are an actor, I think it does help. We have seen actors that don't ride and that they simulate the riding and the stunt person fills in and or doesn't like horses or even allergic, and that takes, it puts, I think, a barrier between what you are trying to get across, especially in this film. You need something very connected. Now, your choice of doing a night scene, like night scenes and so on, that again was to further the message.
Yes. Well, do you know, I think now that is cinematographically, I know I won't bore you because I think that's what you wanted, that you'd like to talk about. But that you have, if you think about the night slightly can close things mm-hmm. in. So they can close things in a positive sense, in which you can feel cosseted and actually and as if you have been, made safe. There is a buffer between you and the world. Or it can close in a claustrophobic way.
Mm-hmm.
And claustrophobic, and yet this sense of a void that you don't know what lies out there. And so, in a sense, you feel as if things are pressing in and against you. And yet, even if you were to walk or to move, you could move, but you don't know. I mean, it just seems to go on without any sense of direction or location. And it's a very, I think it allowed for to affirm and just to emphasize the intimacy and again, to close. Whereas the daylight brings us out, and the darkness, I think, brings us in, mm-hmm. and to focus more on these two. And it's a time, and it can be the night, a time associated with contemplation and reflection, or at least certainly he didn't win, so he didn't end up in the nightclub. So he ends up there, and he's there, left brooding, stewing in his own thoughts and murky feelings and of anger and resentment. Mm-hmm. I mean, which essentially is the resentment against his father.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, did that sort of answer your question?
Right,
and
right.
There's a mystery. I mean, there's, we also have that sort of mystery of the night, of what is happening, and what is going on. So,
right. Now, this film has been to a number of festivals. Would you like to speak about that?
Okay. Yes. It's been to several festivals. It's been to the International Short Film Festival in Hamburg. It's to Bulgaria, to Berlin, to Long Island.
And it came to Canada, Montreal?
Yeah. Ah, yes, to Montreal, the Montreal World Film Festival. Mm-hmm. So it's been to Moscow and, so to Delhi, to a number of places. And we've been fortunate to win a number of awards, and I think I'm particularly pleased for the gold medal award that we received for the music, and that the composer Tom Hunt, who was responsible for the music, and lately the best cinematography at the Equus International Film Festival in Montana. I was pleased with these because these are in the recognizing the various crafts and the other creative collaborators that I had. I mean, you know, who all help to make, who all make the film,
mm-hmm.
make
yes.
it beautiful, that there is no, I mean, that you have an aspect, the sound you can think about, the sound isn't a small or a minute aspect of the film, it's actually a high percentage mm-hmm. of creating the effect and the feel.
Definitely. Yes, all together, it's just quite wonderful. Do you have any plans to bring it to North America in another sort of venue or something?
I'm in talks with someone about that, and that would be specifically in Canada, in Ontario, I believe. But I mean, I would like to try to set up, you know, a couple more screenings, mm-hmm. some more screenings. And so anyone who is interested and would like to invite the film, I mean, you know, these are even private screenings, screenings are private or private public, if you see what I mean, screenings
yes.
apart from a festival. I'm
right.
not necessarily involved with the festival, but to make an event out of it, that would be great.
And wonderful. Is there any way to purchase the film or the DVD?
Yes, there is. The DVDs are for sale on the website. That is theequestrianfilm.com.
Okay.
So the DVDs are available there, and so people should look out as well, because coming in November there will be some different little offers that we'll have going on.
Excellent. So that would be on the website of The Equestrian. Now, do you have ways for people who love your film to get in touch with you? Do you have, does The Equestrian have a Facebook page or a Twitter
yes.
following?
There is a Facebook page that's, facebook.com/ The Equestrian Film.
Mm-hmm.
We're also on Twitter, and that's at Equestrian Film.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd love to have people get in touch and keep the conversation going on.
Right.
Also, please join the mailing list. So, if you want to look out for any particular deals or screenings or offers coming up, you can get in touch with us like that as well.
Right. And I think the wonderful thing about the internet and social media is that people have an opportunity to give feedback to the creators and let them know how much they love what you've created, and hopefully hear about what you're planning to create in the future. I'm hoping that you will do some more Equestrian based films.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, that's wonderful. All right, well, thank you, Sybil, so much for this. I think you're quite talented, and it's a beautiful piece of work, The Equestrian, and I hope that people will go ahead and purchase the film, because it's definitely a wonderful piece of work.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you today for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
All right, then. We'll say goodbye.
All right, then. Thank you and goodbye to everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed my interview today with Sybil Mayer, director of The Equestrian, Honey and Sting, and The Chef's Letter. For links and more information about Sybil Mayer, please go to straightfromthehorsesmouthradioshow.com. Now a short message from Whitehall Publishing.
When you're finally ready to publish that book you've been promising yourself you would write someday, contact Whitehall Publishing. We're here to help, and we can take your book from concept to completion. At Whitehall, you'll be treated like the successful author you were meant to be. Visit us online at www.whitehallpublishing.com or email us at info@whitehallpublishing.com to get started today. What are you waiting for?
This is Paula Slater signing off for Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. We'll see you next week. Bye.